Khadr Adnan was so much more than just about hunger striking because of administrative detention. He really tried to shine a light on the entire system of imprisonment, not just whether you're in a prison, but when you live under military occupation in a larger prison as well. Welcome to This is Palestine. I'm Deanna Bhutu.
And I'm Amanda Saade.
On his 87th day of hunger striking, Sheikh Khadr Adnan has died in an Israeli prison. We'll be speaking with Deanna Bhutu, who will share with us some information about his life and who Khadr Adnan was.
You know, Amanda, I can't actually even believe the news. I'm having such a hard time processing this, even though for at least five weeks now, we've known that his situation has been getting worse. His wife, Randa, has been calling upon people to come out, to protest, to demand his release. And yet still, it's still very shocking for me and for others in Palestine, as I'm sure it is for you as well.
I know that you met with Khadr Adnan just last year, and you spoke with him. Can you start off telling us about Khadr Adnan and also what stuck out most to you about his character, his personality, and what kind of activist, human, father, son, husband he was?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we first heard of Khadr Adnan many, many, many years ago, but the first time that he became very well known was in the year 2012. And at that time, he was one of the few Palestinians who had gone on a prolonged hunger strike that was an individual hunger strike. It wasn't a collective hunger strike, but it was an individual hunger strike. And he ended up striking for such a long period of time, it was 66 days at the time, that it captured the world's attention. And you have to ask the question, why? And it was because at the time he had been imprisoned without charge, without trial, and under what this very odd procedure that's very sanitizingly named administrative detention. There's nothing administrative about it, and it's hardly detention. It's actually being thrown in prison without charge, without trial, where you can be held indefinitely as long as you are able to see a judge once every 6 months. And in the case of Khadr Adnan, he lost about 7 years of his life in this process. So he first became very well known in 2012 when he went on this very prolonged hunger strike, which then set off a chain of other Palestinians going on hunger strike and other people around the world as well. Khadr Adnan was certainly no stranger, unfortunately, to hunger strikes. This was his fifth hunger strike. This was his longest hunger strike. And as he told me, with each and every hunger strike, it was beginning to take a toll on his body, whether it was the more than 60 days in 2012 or the more than 50 days in 2021. And of course, this final time of 87 days. Each and every time, it was taking a prolonged toll, a protracted toll on his life and cutting his life short. In my meeting with Khadr Adnan, there were a few things that I was struck by. The first was just how much strength he had. Everything from talking about how the only thing that had kept him going through his days of prolonged hunger strike were his faith, his iman, as well as his love for his country, for Palestine, and for his belief that individuals have to live in dignity, in freedom, and the desire to have a better world and to see a better life for his wife, Randa, and his 9 children. He wasn't just a family man that was concerned with his insular family, but concerned about Palestine as a whole and about us as a whole, the people as a whole. The day that we went to go see him, he was really concerned with what was happening to one of his aunts and making sure that somebody was with her, one of the kids was able to be with her. He was concerned about making sure that his bakery was still operating. He ran a small bakery in Kabatia, and about making sure that his small grocery store was also operating. He talked about how he would that he really would take care of people within the community who needed help, and he was so concerned with this. These attempts to try to take away our dignity, and wanted to make sure that his kids were taught that they needed to live in dignity and in freedom. And this was his message, was effectively live free or die. And he was very well aware that the Israeli authorities were going to assassinate them, as they did. He was very, very, very well aware of that. And spoke about that, and also spoke about how he wasn't afraid of that, that any liberation struggle is going to have people who are martyred, and that he wasn't afraid of that. And so those were the things that struck me the most about who he was, his personality, his convictions. But there was so much more to him than just that. He talked about everything from how he went on hunger strike to why he went on hunger strike. And I was actually surprised to learn that his first hunger strike was in 1999, when he was arrested by the Palestinian Authority. He also talked about how there were so many attempts to try to break his hunger strike, everything from attempting to use his wife and children to get him to break his hunger strike to no avail, obviously, to trying to bring in religious leaders to convince him that hunger striking was against Islam. And as he put it, it's not. What's against Islam is to live without dignity. And it really struck me how, in the face of all of these years of imprisonment, of arrests, 12 arrests at least, years and years of imprisonment, again, without charge, without trial, all of the torture, he sustained a great deal of torture, so much so that when he went on his first prolonged hunger strike in 2012, the prison authorities beat him so badly that they said, "That's it, you're never going to have any more children." And at the time, he only had two daughters, and they called him Abu Benet. "You're only going to be the father of two daughters." And his response to them was, "Even if I am Abu Benet, even if I'm the father of just two daughters, that's not the end of me." Of course, he then went on to have seven more children after those two daughters. And so these were the things that struck me. And what's been fascinating, or I guess not fascinating, I don't know what the proper word is, but Khadr Adnan it wasn't just about administrative detention, but it was even beyond that. In this last time of his imprisonment, the Israelis came up with some bogus charges. And it's those bogus charges that are also important. The bogus charges are that it's suspicion of being a member of a political party. Again, you know, just so that you understand, being a member of a political party is for the most part outlawed in the West Bank by the Israelis. They bar it. The other thing that he was charged with was of supporting the hunger strikers. Again, you can see that it's all about trying to quash any sort of resistance or freedom of expression. But also, it was about the medical neglect. For quite a long period of time, his wife, Randa, was indicating that he needed to have medical intervention. He needed medical attention. And instead, they just kept him in his prison cell. They even went so far as to delay his bail hearing. It was supposed to be held late last week, but they delayed it under the pretext that he could be able to have a bail hearing on the 10th of May. Of course, he didn't make it to the 10th of May. And so it's Khadr Adnan was so much more than just about hunger striking because of administrative detention. He really tried to shine a light on the entire system of imprisonment, not just whether you're in a prison, but when you live under military occupation in a larger prison as well. You know, every person I ever met who met him, every person I ever spoke to who met with him, said that he radiated light. And indeed he did. He radiated light. He had a lightness to him. There was something that was very powerful about Khadr Adnan.
When we went and spoke to him, there was a moment that he said, I did not want to live in a prison. I wasn't born in a prison. And he was talking about after hunger striking, I think it was his third time. And, you know, this goes back to what you're talking about, the larger issue of not just hunger striking because you're currently in prison, but it's the system. It's a system that you're wanting freedom from.
One of the things, Amanda, that was amazing was when seeing him, he said something that was very important. He said, I wasn't born in a prison. And what he meant by that was that we weren't meant to be shackled, whether those shackles are inside a physical Israeli prison, or whether those shackles are the larger system of military occupation, larger system of denial of freedom, of military rule, of colonization. His point was he was hunger striking. Again, it wasn't just regarding administrative detention. And we do a disservice to Khadr Adnan if we just focus on the administrative detention part of it, or we just focus on the prison part of it. His message was much broader than that, which is that we weren't meant to live in cages. We weren't meant to live under this system of this imprisonment and under these prison conditions. And instead, we have to struggle and resist to be free. And, you know, he, in his final message, among his final messages to us, he said, I've paid the price literally with my body, and I've turned into skin and bones. The meat on my body has melted, and until my last breath, I'm going to continue to demand freedom. And this morning, as we learned the news of his killing, his wife repeated those very same words, that he paid the price literally with his body, and that it's incumbent upon us to continue to demand freedom until our last breath.
Do you have any information on Khadr Adnan's funeral arrangements?
No, unfortunately, Amanda, there's nothing clear right now. As I'm sure you already know, and others already know, one of the things that the Israelis do is they have a practice of holding on to the bodies of Palestinian martyrs, whether they die in prison or if they are killed by the Israelis shooting them. And it's not clear what's going to happen to Khadr Adnan. They haven't made it clear whether they will release his body, whether they won't. Based on what we've seen in the past, what they do is they hold on to the body, and then they demand from the family that a very quiet funeral be held, or they release the body in the middle of the night. It's all an attempt to try to control Palestinian lives. They control us in life, and they even want to control in death. So it's not entirely clear what funeral arrangements are being made and whether they're going to hold on to him, whether they're going to release him, or what exactly is going to happen. But given that Israel has held on to so many bodies for such a long time, I wouldn't be surprised if they also try to deny the family the ability to bury him in dignity. He left behind a will, and I want to read part of it. He writes, "As martyrdom draws near, we have a right to write our own will in the name of God, the beneficent, the merciful. All praise belongs to Allah, Lord of the worlds, that I've succeeded in conducting the hunger strike for freedom. Thanks be to God for his countless blessings, and peace and blessings upon God and the Prophet Muhammad. I send you these words of mine as my fat, flesh, and bones have melted away, and my strength has weakened from my imprisonment in the beloved, occupied Palestinian city of Ramli. This will of mine, I write to my family. This will of mine, I write to my family, children, wife, and people." And I should add here that he was always talking about Palestinian unity. "To my wife and sons, I ask that you hold true to God's word, to hold to his cord, to seek his favor rather than that of others, and to speak justly at all times, to stay true to your blood ties, to keep your prayers and almsgiving, to remain pious and preserve God's rights in ourselves, our belongings, our each and every move, and even our tranquility. Never forget that the greatest of Palestine's homes are those of its martyrs, its prisoners, its wounded, and the righteous. I ask you to care for your uncles, your relatives, neighbors, and anyone we are indebted to. And if I'm martyred, then do not allow the occupier to dissect my body. Bury me next to my father in a humble grave with a headstone that reads, 'Here lies God's humble servant, Khadr Adnan. Pray for him, his parents, and all Muslims.' Make mine a humble grave and ask God to grant me steadfastness, forgiveness, and mercy, and that my grave be one of heaven's meadows rather than a pit of hellfire, and that our deeds be accepted in their entirety in his service. Im Abdurrahman's wife, and my children, Ma'ali, Bisan, Abdurrahman, Muhammad, Ali, Hamzi, Maryam, Omar, and Zainab, forgive me. My dear siblings, Abu Adnan, Abu Anas, Im Nur, and all of my uncles and relatives and neighbors, forgive me for any of my shortcomings. I'm leaving this world now, but be confident that nothing has kept me away from you except for duty. And to the noble people of Palestine, I write to you this message with greetings and love, and I am in full of trust of his mercy, his aid, and his empowerment. This is God's land, which he has promised to us, a promise of the hereafter. Do not despair, no matter what the occupier's actions are, as regardless of the extent of their escalation in their occupation, their aggression and oppression and transgression, it remains God's victory that draws near and his promise of victory and empowerment to his servants even closer. Greetings and salutations to the families of the martyrs, to the prisoners, and to all free men and revolutionaries. From your loving husband, Im Abdurrahman, from your loving father, my children, from your loving son, O people of Palestine. Pray that God accept me as a martyr in his service." And this was signed by Khadr Adnan Mir Ramli on April the 2nd, 2023.
Thank you for listening to This is Palestine, a podcast brought to you by the Institute for Middle East Understanding. The IMEU is a nonprofit focused on giving you access to untold stories, facts, and expert sources on all things Palestine. For more information, please visit our website at www.imeu.org and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at the IMEU. Please don't forget to subscribe. I'm Deanna Butu. Thanks for listening.